Welcome, welcome, welcome to this first episode of the Hub platform. This is one of great excitement for me because I started this just for a number of reasons, but I want to go ahead and get right into it. The media circuit, this outlet was created to give people of African descent in this country something of their own. This is a place where people who have been disenfranchised for many years can come to and feel, for lack of a better word, safe. This is a place where you can come to and get what you need when you need it. A place where you don't need a pass to get a seat at the table because you are always at the table here. And this is also a place where you can get all you need to know when you need to know it, from mental health solutions to spiritual health to emotional intelligence, to physical health, just every and anything that I believe we need to know. One is living human beings in society, but I believe when you go around our communities around America, a lot of information and a lot of things, for lack of a better word, people like us haven't had exposure to. And so with this platform, I hope to be able to share a lot of things from different areas of life that will be solution-based. Hear that again. I want you to hear that because this is key. Everything on this platform will be solution-based, meaning when I do an episode, when I have a conversation, I'm not an expert, but the people I bring on are people who I believe who are tested, tried, and true in their collective fields, who can provide information and solutions that would go and be for your life. And this is for people of African descent, for people who I've tended to serve are young, Black men who grow up in the hoods of America, for people just in general who grow up in communities that don't feel seen or heard. And so this will be an opportunity for those people to come here and get whatever you need. So I want to start this off the right way. I want this to help create transformation in communities. And thankfully, almost anyone can have a platform these days, but I'm choosing to make content that will be helpful and not just entertaining. So I'm actually doing my first episode from Zoom, and you're about to see a man who is going to come in, and I'm going to introduce him, but I want to say hello first. And so as he comes in, I'm just going to get him in. Oh, and there we go. And you should see him. And I love the picture already because this is kind of where we're going. Great day to you, sir.
Hey, sir, how are you?
I am doing well. I am doing well. It is so good to see you.
Oh, it's a blessing to see you as well. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, sir. I was just sharing with the folks who, you know, possibly be checking this out. This will be a re-record also.
Okay.
You know, a powerful first episode with this gentleman here who I'm going to introduce in a second. But of course, technology and things like that kind of changed everything. So I want to go ahead and one, just let the people know who you are. And so without further ado, I want to go ahead and introduce my first guest. This is the first episode of The Hub, and I wanted to come in with a bang. And so this man that you see on the screen is making a massive impact in his community and is a personal gem and pillar in my own life. He has taught Black men the power of knowing their true roots from Africa. Now, I had the honor of being in his program, Reaching Back, also sublined in that was manhood development in high school, where I learned about manhood and how it was traditionally practiced in Africa. Now, he is also a community leader, an educator, a thought leader, a father, a husband, and much more that you'll learn about. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, welcome Mr. Malcolm Thomas to the platform. How are you doing?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. So I'm thankful that one, when people come in, they'll probably think, okay, this is a podcast about Africa because we both kind of dress similar. So
right. No, but that wasn't planned, y'all. That wasn't planned. Yes. That's what I had on today. We woke up like this.
Yes, sir. So Mr. Malcolm, one, I know, of course, I've expressed to you and just in our time, and I've learned so much from you that I think the things that we need to do are solution-based. Mm-hmm. And this platform is predicated on, one, not only learning the stories of people who I know in my life who I believe are tested, tried, and true in their fields, but also providing whatever expertise. I know nobody's perfect, but I believe you're somebody who is a pillar, and I would love for people to just get a taste of what I got in high school and that I've gotten for the last, however, I think like 14 or 15 years. And so one of the first things I'll just ask, even in this small snippet, can you just share a bit of your story and kind of how your life has led to the work that you do now?
Sure. Well, just want to give honor, first of all, to my ancestors and my parents, who were a big part of who I am. My father, Alan Thomas, my mother, Ruth Thomas. I was raised in an environment where I was taught about things relating to my culture and myself from a very young age. I was named after Malcolm X. So prior to my birth, I've never told a lot of people that my father read the book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, right before I was born. And it told my mother, if I have a son, he'll be named Malcolm. So that kind of loomed over my life, because that was a major thing to carry. But going through adolescence, I did come upon the book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, at age 17, and had never read about Malcolm X, unfortunately, up until that point. I'm almost embarrassed to say, but growing up, my mother would always have books on like the Panthers and different things around the house and nutrition and stuff. And so I didn't understand, if I'm being honest, why my mom was so different than other people's moms. I mean, I grew up in a home, and you might be able to relate to this to a certain extent. I just couldn't do certain things other kids could do. So we had a certain standard for ourselves. And as a child, I didn't always appreciate that. But as I got older, I appreciated the level of rearing that I had. My grandfather, who's born on the same day as Nelson Mandela, so their birthdays are the exact same day, July 18th, 1918. They're born the exact day, same day. They died actually 3 months apart from each other. My grandfather passed away in October. Nelson Mandela passed away that next January. They got sick around the same time. They kind of took a turn. He was like the most revered person in our family, like nationwide. You would go to a reunion, and we used to have these huge family reunions, and everyone wanted to be around him, and everyone respected him. And he treated everybody with attention and with a level of focus. And he made you feel important no matter who you were. So because he treated me that way, I'm like, I have to be somebody if this is my grandfather, because he was like a rock star. You know, I never seen anybody who was as beloved and respected as him in my life up until that point, really, even up until now, that I knew personally. And so that was a huge part, I need to mention that, of who I was. And so I kind of felt from a young age that I needed to do something to even be worthy of being a part of a family like this, or having this much love from people. You know, I felt loved as a child. And that was, things were expected of me. And I think that's important. That's very important. That's, I can't talk about myself without talking about those people. Fast forward to college, I read Malcolm X. It changed my life, because I felt like I knew what my purpose was in life, finally. And here's a man who could change. So whatever was good about me, I felt could be better. And I had reached a point in my life where I had been underachieving all through high school. And I felt like I was letting a lot of people down, including myself. But I didn't know how to change it. I'd gotten into a kind of a bad set of habits. And reading that book gave me some confidence in that. And that was really important for me at that time. And so I remember going back and apologizing to different people for not being better. And deciding, that's when I stopped eating candy. I stopped on the spot one day between my senior year of college and going to Penn State. I said, I'm not eating any more candy ever again. I stopped eating certain foods. I started working out every day. I just did all these things almost overnight at once. And so going into college, there was a lot of violence going on when I went to Penn State University. And I went to a school where there were no Black people on campus the first day that I saw for the entire day. Now, just imagine being on a college campus with 30,000 people and you see one person of African descent all day. So I called my mom, like, this was a mistake. But lo and behold, she said, well, just stick in there, hang in there. I saw a flyer for a thing called the Black Caucus on a poll the next day, and I just took it down. I know you're not supposed to do that, but I took the flyer and said, I'm going to this meeting. I know there'll be some Black people here. And so I met some of the most dynamic people I've ever met in my life there. And I just poured myself into that with everything. And I remember coming home after about 3 months. And one of my friends said, man, you're different. And at first I thought it was like an insult, but he said, but not in a bad way. It's just, you're different. But I knew I was different. And so since that time, I made a covenant with some of my brothers there and sisters as well on campus that we were going to devote our lives to uplifting our community, uplifting ourselves. And everything I've done since then has been either a frustrated or an inspired attempt to do that. And reaching back was the culmination of a lot of work that I had been doing on trying to work with boys and young people, but also to work on myself. So today, all of my work still continues in that trajectory. And I feel like that is the mandate for me, is to work with men and with others to try to change ourselves in the hope of improving the condition of people on this planet.
A couple of key things there. Thank you so much, too, for sharing your story. I don't think people know how powerful it is when somebody is able to kind of go through the pivotal moments in their life that gave them transformation. And so I think about a couple of things that stand out. One is all of this kind of this change, this shift happened with your exposure, which is a key word to one, that being Malcolm X, which I previously shared that watching the movie with Denzel Washington recently. I mean, you see from him being out in the streets, doing drugs, doing a number of things. Then when he gets to prison, then when he gets exposed to the brother from the Nation of Islam, and actually his language shifts toward a point where he's like, he's cursing in front of this man. And then he says, a man curses when he doesn't have the words of his mind to say. So all those different things come up. And then also just hearing in your story, just kind of the impact one that your family has had, even engrafted in the work that you've done now and ancestors have had. And so as I look at this and kind of translate now into the work that you do, can you just share a little bit about some of, whether it's through manhood development or through the Life Steam Academy, anything that you can share kind of what's happening now in the work that you do?
Well, currently I'm the Dean of Students at Life Male Steam Academy, which is a brand new school. It's been open 3 years. It's an all male STEAM Academy, College Preparatory STEAM Academy here in Pittsburgh, that was started by a pastor of a church here, Rodman Church, Dr. Dale Kennedy, and his wife, Reverend Talita Kennedy. And he had been coming to my seminars at the BMLDI, which is the Black Male Leadership Development Institute that's run by Robert Morris and the Urban League. I used to do a course called The Journey to Manhood there. And he would come and sit in the back of the room, unbeknownst to me, he was taking notes. And he came up to me one day and said, I want you to help me run my school. So that's what I've been doing there as an administrator there for the past 3 years. And my work there centers around discipline. But for me, discipline is a proactive item. Discipline is something that should not be approached or thought of punitively, which is the way that it's often thought of when you think of Black people in general, Black students and young people in particular. Like, what do we do after they make mistakes? But the thing is, how do we help to model and cultivate people to have self-discipline, to be able to govern their lives according to a set of ideas and principles that are for their and other people's own benefit? So what does that look like? And so I've always been really excited and about the idea of things like rites of passage and initiation, where you're training people to develop themselves to be able to live a very high level of have a high level of effectiveness and with a high level of integration and harmony with everyone and everything around them. And so reaching back was really an attempt to do that. And I've continued that work with a program that I currently have founded with a gentleman by the name of Joshua Colbert, who is my partner. It's called the Sankofa Society of Excellence. And our job is to help bring development, the age, what we call the ageless wisdom, what has been called by that by a gentleman by the name of Ra'u Nefer Amen, the ageless wisdom, back, the old ways. The reaching back is not just a program, but it's actually the reaching back movement. How do we reach back to get the things we have lost to help us to restore our health, restore our identity, restore our communities, restore our relationships, restore the rightful place of men that are not seen as menaces and have to be, engaged in conversations about toxic masculinity. But what is a healing masculinity? What does that look like? We're able to be masculine in a way that's healing in a way that's unifying for people. So that's the work that I do. And with the Sankofa Society of Excellence, our flagship product is called the Manhood Maximizer, which is the program, which is really a developmental program or an initiation program in the world to help awaken certain character virtues and strengths in men and others.
Thank you. And I thought about one of the things that I've noticed, and a couple of things I want to highlight too. Mr. Malcolm, if he doesn't toot his own horn, I'm going to do it, because I was in his program in high school. My peers had the opportunity to go to Africa. I did not have that chance. My mom was like, no, she at the time, she wasn't with it.
I understood though, man.
But later on, I had the opportunity to go with my wife, and we went to Nigeria. And I mean, just thinking about my peers being exposed to Africa at the ages of like 15 and 16, and then me getting that exposure, you know, later on in life, but I think at the perfect time, at the divine time. And then I'm also just thinking about kind of what is necessary, I think, and even to my existence now as a man, as a Black man in America, is just learning about Africa more and its importance to not only our personal history, but world history. And so one of the things that I think Mr. Malcolm did a great job of is that during our time in manhood development, and I'm now reading a book by Naeem Akbar, Visions of Manhood, which he kind of highlights the transitions from maleness to boyhood to manhood. But you literally walked us through levels of manhood in your program, and we were able to see, and it wasn't defined by what you did necessarily, but it was character traits that kind of reflected in those things. So I'm just curious for you to define to people Africa's importance, specifically one for people of African descent, but also just to people who live in America who don't understand its importance.
Well, Africa is, you know, we hear the phrase a lot. It's become cliche that Africa is the mother of civilization. But in practical terms, what that means is that Africa is the only landmass, is the only plate of land where human life existed for the first 60 and some estimate 100,000 years of human history and evolution. So it means, if you can think of the vastness of the planet Earth, there were no human beings anywhere for 60,000 plus years except on the continent of Africa. So just think about that for a second. Think about the expanse of your life, you know, 30 some odd years, right? 30-ish, right? 60,000 years, there is no human life or human culture anywhere on earth except in Africa. That means language, all the institutions that we see formed there. So there's a repository of wisdom and experience that we can draw from. And when you study history, you find that that's what other people have done. They have drawn from Africa in every imaginable way, not only in terms of its natural resources, but its philosophies and practices have nourished the things from Greece, from Rome, from the place to call the Levant right now. You know, those were originally people on that strip where people are fighting right now. Those were the Canaanites, were Black people. Don't take my word for it. Just research it. You don't have to. We don't have to say sound uber Black. All we have to do is research. And when you do that, you will find that there is a place in this world for everybody. But what has happened with people of African descent is that their place in the world has been marginalized and negated to the detriment of the entire world. Because this is the place where the seminal ideas have come from. The first calendar comes from Black people. The first mapping of the solar system, the first understanding of architecture, the ability to build pyramidal structures, the ability to do engineering with the Nile River, in the second, first dynasty. All these are things that we have to draw from for the good of humanity. A question we have to ask is, you know, was there a place or time when certain problems that we have had already been addressed and solved? And that answer is yes. But we're not taught to look in the direction of Africa, because we're taught that everything newer is better. And so as we move away, once people understand that the origin indisputably is Africa, you have to be convinced, or they have to convince you, that we, as everything moving away from that, represents human evolution and progress, when in fact that is not the case. what has really progressed is technology, the advancement of technology. We make better things, but we have not found a way to make better people. So the people using these things create mass destruction. Right now, it's irony that we can even say this, but we have a person who's the leading presidential candidate to win the election in the upcoming election, who is a convicted felon, who may actually be in jail at the time when the election results are decided. Just imagine this. Someone who's been accused of sexual assault, of all sorts of crimes, of basically trying to incite a riot where people would have been killed. So this is what we've come to, where we don't have an idea about creating the best possible person, because the quality of human life is what determines how things on earth go. It's not the animals, it's not the plants, it's not the insects that will determine the destruction of the planet Earth. It's the human beings who have not been evolved. And that evolutionary process started in Africa, reached its height in Africa, and we have not reached that level ever since. So we must go back to ways of thinking and living that we have lost, but we have to strip the racism, the chauvinism, and all of the different isms that separate us from all the people of this earth, to take the best wisdom, the best knowledge, and you will find that leads you back to early Black civilizations in Africa and what they call parts of Asia that were also Black.
I get chills in my bones just listening to this information. One, because in doing research, these things people can find that are true,
right?
But then also, I guess now I've seen a reoccurring issue and challenge amongst us, particularly at times in America, to kind of make that link. And we think, well, now America is now in this new age, technology is advancing. We've kind of been lured to sleep by, I guess, perceived freedoms, which,
right.
Yes, I have the ability to do something like this, but we're still bogged down mentally, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so in thinking about this, a lot of questions have been coming up just about particularly gun violence in the communities, things that they see from some of our young men. And so I would just say, how do you put that in context of kind of the conversation we're having now? What do you think that's linked to and likened to give people a better understanding?
Wait, I want to make sure I understand your question. Could you ask me one more time again?
Yes, yes. So I know a lot of folks have kind of questioned, and even when I worked in the news, like, hey, there's a lot of violence that just happens in the Black community.
Mm-hmm,
and
right,
so
okay.
There's this understanding and providing context for folks who would just say, just throw it out there, it's just violence, it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say
well,
to that?
What I would say is that, there's a cause of and effect relationship between everything in the world. That's just scientific. And you can argue that many of the systems of the country are not really broken. They are working the way they were designed to work. A major item, particularly in the Western man's mentality and world, is economics. That's the leading principle, is material accumulation and material acquisition. So what if you could create a situation where the social order was maintained through the education, through the diet, through the economic situations, through how things are socially engineered that guarantee not just Black people, but the people in general, but in some groups in particular, will always remain on the bottom. When you look at the wealth disparity, for example, between people of African descent and people of European descent, it's tremendous. It's almost unfathomable how that could be the case. But when you look at the conditions under which people of African descent have been brought to this country, have been nourished in this country, the education we've received in this country, our overall health conditions in this country, you'll see that it's a miracle that we're still alive at all. It's really miraculous to see that we have not been exterminated almost. Because when you look at what happened to the Native American communities here, most of us probably listening to this podcast or even yourself, can you name 20 full-blooded Native Americans that you know? I can't. That you've met in your life. which was a country that was populated by millions of people of Native American ancestry, I have never met 20 in my life that I can name from memory that I was consciously interacting with as someone from the Native American community of ancestry. Why? Because they have been decimated. They have been completely wiped out. And that is what is happening at other places in the world right now with other populations. But that is also what can happen to people culturally. So the fact that people of African descent are still alive in the numbers that we are is really a miraculous feat when you really think about it, given everything that has gone on. But what we are is, you know, they say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But I would argue that what doesn't kill you can also make help you die slow. Can help you die slow. So you're not dead physically, but you're the living dead. You're walking around as a shell of yourself where your spirit has been crushed all but, and your mind has been turned against you. And your aspirations have been made to be the aspirations of other people, right? So, you know, you say you want these things, but you know, Dr. Amos Wilson says, but how is it that all the things we want are things which keep us in the situation that we're in and it furthers someone else's interests? So people control your cravings even. The things that you seek and that you crave are things that make you sick. You know, a lot of us aren't even craving a certain type of experiences with a woman. Some of us have been taught to crave, you know, multiple women, or to crave foods and products which kill us. Those things didn't happen by accident, I would argue. Those things are engineered, and those are things that are part of the educational process for people of African descent and people in general, because the majority of people in this country, white and black, live at a level that guarantees that a few people will have most of the wealth and will have a quality of life that differs drastically from almost everybody else. So that is what we are. That is what we have been. And the fortunate part about it is we have a culture that we can draw from and we can return to that can save our lives. We have a cultural legacy that we have been taught to look away from that can help us and the planet Earth. The same thing that created civilization can recreate civilization, but we have to return to it first and embrace it, or else we will still be, you know, cannon fodder for others.
Wow. Wow. I had to, one, pull some notes aside, because I just different things, variations popped up in my mind as we were discussing this. And ladies and gentlemen, if you just tuning in, you are listening to the first episode of The Hub with Mr. Malcolm Thomas. And a couple of things came up, as you said that, the use of the word boy. When I'm reading that book by Naeem Akbar, he says that word in itself was reduced and used specifically for black men, of course, during slavery, but it was really conditioning them into a place of immaturity. And so literally when you were called boy, you would live that thing out. And so the things that we probably would very well see in our communities were the conditions of a boy, because it was continually one labeled on them. There's life and death and the power to tell them. People have heard that before. So you put that on somebody, and then not only that, you treat them in a way of what that is. And so I can be 30 years old and you're still telling me to go and pick up and do something that a child would do. And then the second part is a legacy of competence in our education systems, which, I mean, you've heard it time and time again, representation in school systems. I know in second, third grade, I learned nothing about African history. Mm-hmm. Everything was American history, and everything that was taught to me put us in light of the oppressed people who were below, who didn't have any power, which, I mean, we've heard this over and over again, but I just, I'm hoping that people will realize through this conversation and then their own research that this has been a continual process of conditioning. And so that's the scary part, is that we can probably get as rich as we can. We can acquire all that we can and still never help the people that we were supposed to help or do what we were supposed to do, because we've been learned to sleep by thinking we've had freedom. And that's
right. That's right. Yeah. And then, so what'll happen then is that even when you do acquire things, or those of us who were in a position to acquire things, those things will not be used for the service of your own community. So your skills, your talents, your resources, your positions will not be used to uplift the people who need it most and the world in general. They will give you the illusion of success because you are doing better than others. Mm. But you know, success is a group item. You know, you cannot be successful unless you're a part of a group that is successful, because that group is what determines your own viability. So everything is about the group and the world and the planet. You know, some people destroy the planet Earth, for example, not knowing that if the planet dies, we all die. No matter how much material resources I have, if the planet is dead, what does it really mean, right? And so that type of mentality is something that Naeem Akbar talks about. And this is something that we have to get back into ourselves as men and as a people, that we have to have a collective self idea. What are we doing for the collective?
You know? Collective. Yeah. And I mean, just kind of winding down in the conversation a bit, but it just overall, I think that's one of the solutions. And if you could even touch on that more for the person who tunes in, who, and I'm hoping that there may be some teenagers, young Black males or young Black women who tune in, or college educated, whatever, any demographic, folks in the communities who don't get the attention or feel valued. What are just some tangible things, ways of thinking, whether it's real life things that they could start doing to kind of, one, begin to acquire this knowledge, but also just to create some sort of transformational change in their lives?
Well, the first thing I would say is that, you know, as I've often said, leaders are readers. So in order to really, really try to get an advantage over your circumstances, you have to begin to drink from the wisdom and experience of other people. You have to learn things without having to go through every single thing through experience, because sometimes the price you pay to get wisdom through an experience is your life. So you have to be able to read and study. I've never seen a person that I truly, truly looked up to as an example of outstanding living who was not a reader, who did not study and try to learn things and were not eternal students. So you have to get into the habit of reading and of trying to think and strategize about life, right? Secondly, you have to be someone who's being guided. As I said, success is a group endeavor. So you always have to have a coach or a guide, and you always have to have a team. You have to have people who are working with you, who are of like mind and kindred spirit, who want what you want. You know, I know for me, I had to make a decision at one point in my life. The people I hang around, I hang around, you know, if I'm going to be around men, I want them to be committed men, married men, people who are involved with their children's lives. Those are men that help make me stronger. It's not that I judge those men who are not like that, but I need the strength of being around people who are trying to excel in those areas to be the very best husband, father, and man that I can be. So I want to always have a peer group, and I will say to always find a peer group, even if it's just one other brother or individual who really wants to be better and to help contribute to things being better, and always be under the guidance of someone who is more experienced and more insightful than you. Right? So you don't want to be your own teacher. You want to have someone who can guide you. Some of that's through reading, but you always need a living example and an input of somebody who's a living, you know, a living mentor or guide. And lastly, I would say always work on, you know, trying as best you can to develop a regimen and routines that are reliable. You know, so they say success is hidden in your daily routine. So you want to live a life where you have certain success habits, things that you do daily that help to keep you anchored to yourself and to help you keep on track with your goals. One of those habits, I think, should always be, or a set of those should be, around health, because a lot of times the experiences that we've undergone and the type of lifestyle that we've been given is not health promoting. So in reaching back, we talked a lot about health and fitness, but that is because you need a foundation of physical wellness to be able to do great things. When I see great leaders, I see energy. either people who learn to have it or were born with it. Yet you do not do anything great with no energy. So to be able to persevere, to have drive, to be able to have resilience, the ability to have buoyancy and optimism, the ability to deal with the ups and downs of life, that takes energy. To be able to think and see clearly. So you want to have a regimen that helps to maintain and enhance your life force. Look at what you're putting into your body and what you're doing every day to train yourself for the long and sometimes arduous, you know, process that we call life. And so those are some basic things that I would say, you know, always be a reader, always have a guide, find and form a part of a team, squad, circle. Everything elite happens in a group. You cannot be your best outside of a group. And also make sure that you have regimen and routines that are relatively consistent of things that you have decided that you're going to do every day. And a big part of those should be based on improving and optimizing your health.
Yeah. No, that's great stuff. And I've learned that over time. A quick memory I would share is I'll never forget, and I'll shout out friends like Hassan and I think at the time Teron and folks who were in the program with me in high school. And I remember we had a conversation, and I'll make people laugh, but we had a conversation about things that were best for men. And one of the foods that I think we talked about was black beans. And we talked about black beans being best for men and semen. And so I'm just making people might laugh at this, but I'm saying ever since that time period, we might, I don't know, we were processing at the time. So things might've been funny to us, but it was so much coming at us that was like, wow. I think years later, when I look back, I mean, now I eat black beans every other day, or, you know, I'm just, I mean, it's
why you're so strong. No, I'm just joking.
I mean, just overall,
yeah,
I think there are just, I mean, in many different ways. Hopefully what I hope people take away is that if we're better, and if people of African descent in this country are better, the whole world is better.
Right.
And I think that's for any part of humanity, no matter where you go, a community that doesn't know where they come from, that doesn't know its original roots, that doesn't know the things that were necessary for survival and for living are extremely important. And that's what I began to learn. And when I stepped foot in Nigeria, I remember feeling this connection, and I had took my test and found out that I was Yoruba. And so those things I've now began to explore. And Mr. Malcolm, when I say, and this is in my own family too, I've shared this with them and they're like, well, this is scary. Why would you want to learn all this? I'm like, well, imagine you having $1 million stashed away in your home. Would you not want to know where it came from or if it was even in your home? That's the same way I feel about knowing our roots. And so that's something I've just learned over time.
Amazing. Yes, sir. Well,
can you please just share any ways that people can get connected to you or what you're doing, if they wanted to check you out on social media, anything that you could provide?
Well, if they want to check us out, you can always go to our site, which is manhooddevelopment.org. And our program is called the Sankofa Society of Excellence. And we're trying to build a society that's based on excellence. And part of that excellence is based in a character foundation. There is no excellence from our point of view that isn't reflected in virtue, how you conduct yourself, you know, your ability to deal with life from a position of virtue. That is the Black tradition. You know, it is not about manipulating people. It is not about having power over other people. It is about having power over yourself and to be able to live your life. That's why when you go to ancient Egypt and you see what they call the Sphinx, which we call the Haremakit, it is a picture of a king's head on a lion's body, which is a symbol that to be able to rule the animating forces, your own emotions and drives, you are able to have rulership over your life and to have sovereignty in this world. It is not making that lion run. It is not being taken by that lion or carried away by that lion. It is making that lion sit. That lion is healing, sitting. So you must tame those forces in your spirit, and the things in your life that had power over you will cease to have that power over you. And that is what we have to get back to, was those traditions. So that's what our program does. You go to manhooddevelopment.org. You can also support some of the things that we're doing at lifemailsteam.org, which is our school, and continue to support, most importantly, this podcast, because this is where knowledge is dropping. And I want to make sure that people are able to come to spaces like this and we can all learn and share and grow together.
No. Well, again, thank you so much, Mr. Malcolm. I can, this is probably the best thing for me all week when I can just sit down and listen and get wisdom from you and feel like I'm back in university prep after school. And so this is
we're here so together growing, man. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank
yes.
God. Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yes, and thank God for sure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, this was the first rendition and first episode of the Hub platform. I hope that you tune in for more. There's going to be amazing people joining me all the time who can just share any of their expertise. And also understand, when I bring people on, I'm not saying like, hey, I'm this perfect person who knows mm-hmm. everything. But again, like Mr. Malcolm just said, we are learning and we're just sharing with you what yes. we've learned over time. So I can't thank you enough. Shout out to everybody who's going to support and shout out a couple of brothers I mentioned, Hassan and Tehran and those guys.
Absolutely silent. Yes, yes, yes. Also yes, main sir. Man in the building.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ray, all the brothers. Yeah, man. It was a great time but we're still here for a reason, yes. purpose.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you again, Mr. Mount. See you soon. Talk soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And everybody out there, tune in.